Today on ABCDTOS, is there in truth no beauty?
Welcome to ABCD:TOS, the Star Trek podcast where we go through every episode in alphabetical order from All Our Yesterdays to Wolf in the Fold. And you know what? I'm Joe Mazel.
I'm Pete the Retailer.
I am Tom Taylor.
I'm John Engle.
And today we are discussing the season three episode, Is There in Truth No Beauty?
That's right. It's season three, episode five, or season three, episode seven in production order. Originally aired October 18th, 1968. And in production and release order, it's the last episode to be a question. But in our order, it's the first to be a question. So this is that's good. Our first question episode.
It's a question in more ways than one because people always trip up. What the title actually, like I actually found recently, I think I bought it like 20 years ago or something, a box of Star Trek postcards. And there's one of like with an image from this, maybe the geekiest image of all time of Spock with the goggles and stuff, the visor thing and the Itik and everything. And on the back, it says from the episode, is there no truth and beauty or something? Like it's a completely wrong. And I felt like a champion being able to call that out.
You felt like a true Star Trek nerd. You're like, oh, I'll actually.
Have you know, sir.
Well, so when you say this is the for the, a question episode, you mean it revolves around Vic Sage, or do you mean it revolves around Renee Montoya? It DC is in comics.
Hey, it is in fact an episode that has a question mark in it. Now, I of late had the syntax of this episode. It was hammered home to me because this episode. Title, at least, is the reason why Paul F. Tompkins followed me back on Twitter. Because
you're a better man than I.
Well, I hung out with Paul a couple of times, and, you know, we're not close friends, but, you know, I followed him. He hadn't followed me back, but we've talked, we've hung out. And then he tweeted a thing, you know, a joke, obviously. And I always have to be very careful about, you know, comedians when you add on to or you know, throw stuff back at their jokes. Sometimes it doesn't go over well.
No.
But Paul tweeted something, you know, observational humor about like, hey, why is it just, you know, pizza and, you know, funerals that get parlors. Like, what's up? Why are things only in parlors? And I responded like, Paul, is there in truth no beauty? Because a beauty parlor is another.
That's pretty good.
I remember that, actually.
And he not only, I was like, oh, shit, is that am I overstepping my bounds here? And not only did he like it, he followed me back and he replied, yeah.
Awesome. And of course, this all predates the social media platform. So you guys were probably not even a question you wanted, a joke you'd even want to have made.
Right.
That came
around. Right.
Yeah, I found in my old age, I'm not funny. And when
get out of here, stop.
It's true. And when like comedians will post things, and I'm looking at PTF specifically. PFT. Excuse me.
It's like all Thomas
Paul T. Fompkins.
Yeah. All Thomas Fanderson.
Yeah. Like there will be a thing like, oh man, I'm watching Live and Let Die, and you know, goddamn, why do we need to have so many shots of people walking? I'm like, well, if you don't understand production value, Mr. Tompkins, if that is your real name, then I don't know what to tell you. Like, maybe you'd like to discuss some giallo films of the 1970s before you rattle off on your inferior opinions about cinema. And then I realize I should shut up.
Right. Your voice doesn't come through necessarily in text the way that you want. That's a conversation for in person if you ever meet up.
Well, I don't actually, I have the good sense to not actually harass this poor man
or
anybody, because why would I do that? You know?
But anyway, so that let me read the Google blurb. For is there in truth no beauty, parlor? Special security measures are enforced for the visit of a Medusan ambassador because any human who sees them would be struck blind. However, Spock is fascinated by the possibility of a dangerous mind link with the alien.
Now, it's just blind. It's struck crazy, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So do we start with
something?
So do we start with the fact that they called them Medusans?
I mean, well, it's just a coincidence. Yeah. Sure it is.
Like, I'm assuming that they call them that because of that. You know what I mean? That's
yeah, but they call themselves that too, right? That's where the issue
in our
comes
language.
In.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like they're I was going to say that this. My Google blurb for this is Stan Brakhage movies make people go crazy. That's my
Does look a little Brakhage.
But it's hard. It's not really covered, obviously, in the Google blurb. But there's a lot of little twists and turns in this, that wrinkles that I had forgotten about story wise. I'm like, oh yeah, because this, you know. Again, by name, I can narrow it down to one of, you know, two or three episodes. I'm like, all right, I think that one is. And then I, you know, as soon as it starts, I'm like, oh, yeah. Right. The one with Dr. Pulaski and the goggles. So let's back up. This is written by John Lisette Arouest, her. Do you remember?
A woman writer.
We've heard from her before, way back in our first episode. She was the librarian. The librarian who wrote All Our Yesterdays.
Ah, yes.
Oh, sure.
And
library.
This was a spec script that she submitted, and this was what got her in the door, the original version of this. Wow. Went through a couple of iterations, obviously. We'll get to one important edition in a second, but... this was she wrote this one, and that was good enough to get her looked at in a third season episode. That was she was outlining a potential fourth season episode, but that obviously never happened. But that seemed interesting. Mm-hmm. And after they bought this, then she worked through one or two other ideas, and then ended up with All Our Yesterdays came later in terms of her production, her writing it. Mm-hmm. But interesting to see, and that's the director is Ralph Sinensky, who is he's one of those he's not quite a Pevney, but he did like I think 7 episodes or something like that.
He's got a touch.
He's got a touch.
He's got a very specific.
We've seen just I think 1 or 2 of his so far. Yeah, let me look. I called it up before. I think we've only seen maybe 1 or 2 at most. Most of his come later in the.
I'm trying to remember other
alphabet.
Fisheye lenses and.
It's crazy.
Giallo like POV shots.
Right. There's more fisheye lenses in this thing than a Beastie Boys video. It's like crazy.
Yeah. Zing.
It creates an interesting spatial relationship with the Enterprise that I really dig.
Yeah.
We can get into that, but go ahead, Pete.
We have seen one. We've seen one episode, and it was Bread and Circuses.
It's Bread and Circuses time.
Let me think. It's shot outdoors a lot.
Yeah, for the most part, except for the studio
Enterprise,
stuff.
And not on the Enterprise hardly at all, right?
Yeah.
Not much, yeah.
So that's interesting, because he clearly had some very specific ideas on how he wanted to present the Enterprise. And I don't know. I mean, we haven't covered every episode, and I haven't had this eye maybe towards other episodes in the past. But there are some places he puts the camera. Obviously, the lenses, as we've already mentioned. That really open up the space and give you a different look. And it's like almost shocking to realize they built roof ceilings on some of the sets. Like I was rather shocked to see the dome-like ceiling of the bridge.
Yeah.
And that angle he's coming from is like, what is that station? It's like kind of where Chekhov gets his hand burned in motion picture or something. Like, I'm trying to think about where that is on the bridge.
Or it's almost like shooting from inside the turbo lift, I think, right? Is that one or the other one?
To the left, I stand guard next to the turbo lift.
Yeah. And you see the whole side past Spock, which you never usually go to.
It's, yeah.
It's like that's those really two shots. You know, there's the famously two shots in Cheers. Where they reverse the camera and you can see the other side of the bar.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
One of them's like
I've never seen
one of them's
that.
Like a Rebecca POV.
Right.
And it's one of them is in the the Norm episode where Norm is throwing the toga party for his coworkers, and he's the only one that wears the toga. Anyway, I remember going to that's where there was this like people were nerding out about the fact that there was like two shots in all of Cheers, which are the reverse wall of Cheers.
Or in like
studio anyway, audience this is sitting there
in Roseanne where you see the other side of the thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, like yeah, yeah.
To pause it before we go crazy with every time we see a sitcom slash hour-long drama where we see the other side of a set, it is weird to see a POV shot from basically the turbo lift from like Uhura's station. Right. Opens it up a little bit. It's an interesting little flair, yeah, which I enjoyed.
Mm-hmm. So the Changeling gave us a little bit of that, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because we get
Changeling was a POV. Big POV episode, it's true.
Yeah. And so I think we even get it exiting the turbo lift at one point, maybe. So we got that shot before. But you know, this one, it's the specifics of the fisheye lens then creates, especially in the corridor. So there's the shot, I think it's the first time we kind of get that shot is after Marvick goes crazy and he goes running down the hall, and then Dr. Jones comes out of the room, and it's like this fisheye lens, and you can see the ceiling and the floor equally in the frame, like top and bottom of the frame. Mm-hmm. It's like, my God, this is just such a different look for the Enterprise. You don't get shots like this. Maybe when Data's having the dreams about the bird flying through the Enterprise, the one time I can think of it even in TNG.
Yeah.
So it's really, I'm impressed. I'm like, hey, you know, it's time for this. It's the third season. Let's open things up a little bit. Let's get some different looks.
And it's an episode that kind of lends itself to that too. Like the weirdness, like the fisheye lens, all the crazy angles and stuff. Although
it's a little psychedelic.
Yeah, they were definitely going for that. And it brought in a lot of the coming along with that is like that. Is it the organ? There's like an organ in the soundtrack. They like lean really heavily on that.
I'm
like,
literally, I think sometimes they were just leaning on it.
I think there's one shot actually when after Larry goes crazy and he's taking over engineering, an organ is playing and he's like hunched over the thing. It looks like he's playing the organ. Engineering.
You expect him to turn around and take off his mask and be like,
And there's weird. So the organ is a little like, that late 60s almost could be a psychedelic album.
Yeah,
cut from a psychedelic, and then there's some loungier horn stuff. There's like some brass horns in the front, heavily forward in the track, and it sounds kind of loungy and weird. In weird moments, like where she's struggling with the decisions to do things, and it'll be like this like loungy brass music. Like this is very this is a very unique Star Trek episode. There's now, a lot of elements that are different.
Yeah,
was Courage the only credited music guy on this episode?
No,
Alexander Courage.
Not Courage, the cowardly dog.
Not Courage, the ideal of behavior.
No, there is a... Oh, shoot, it's in the...
It's Frank Duvall.
Featured music, George Dunning.
Now, I'm sorry, please.
No, it's a... I'm trying to figure out what... Let me see if I can memory alpha him. You talk for a second.
George is Dunning, you said?
Yeah.
If he used Kruger amps, he could get quite an effect.
Sorry.
Real bad joke.
He composed the scores for several episodes.
No worse than
TOS. 23. Look at that. All in seasons 2 and 3.
Oh, wow.
But he did music for iMUD, Gamesters of Triskelion, Immunity Syndrome, all ones that we've... Empath, for The World is Hollow, and I Have Touched the Sky. We've been living in George Duningville for the last couple of months, it looks like.
Wow.
let's see. It he was Academy Award nominated. He did Jolson Sings Again. No Sad Songs from... It looks like From Here to Eternity. That's a movie I've heard of.
I believe the title of the film is called Brazier to Eternity.
Oh, right. did not win any nominations. He was also nominated for a couple of things. All the King's Men, a couple of other good... looks like he worked on a lot of movie stuff in the 40s, 50s, and then kind of faded out a little bit to the point where
the Best Picture winner, All the King's Men, the Broderick Crawford...
John Ireland looks, movie?
Hard to tell. 1949?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's
with
it.
Richard Hale, Al Wyatt, and Gil Perkins, according to Memory Alpha. Because those are people who were in Star Trek.
I think that's the one they tried to remake with Sean Penn a few years back.
Right. Well, they did remake
failed.
It.
Yeah.
Oh, look, it does exist. It's not a...
No, they didn't quite recapture the magic.
Well, that is true.
He also did The World of Susie Wong, which we talked about because that was a Broadway thing for Shatner and not the Empath.
James Shatiga and Oriental Pearl Cream. What was her name? The woman who advertised Oriental Pearl Queen.
Oh, right. Yeah. I can't remember the name of that episode or what her character's
commercial.
Name was. But the one with, Alon of Troyes. That's who it was.
Oh, okay.
But it wasn't Francis Ning who advertised Oriental Pearl Cream. Oriental Pearl Cream was advertised by the woman who did World of Susie Wong and also Flower Drum Song. Because she would mention that during her her credits and then followed it up with, do you ever wonder why Oriental women look so much younger?
And to be clear, you are referencing a brand name product, yes. Oriental Pearl Cream. Yes. No, you're not just like
yes. No, I'm not actually.
It just
yeah.
It just feels weird to hear it.
It does.
I have a big question.
Okay.
I know I got.
Is it Vic Sage or Renee Montoya?
No. Stealing my jokes and turning them around on me.
By the way, who's the creator of Renee Montoya? Anybody know?
I would imagine Bruce Timm or Paul Dini, since she debuted on the Batman cartoon, not in the comic.
Is it Mitch Bryan?
My good friend and co-host Mitch Bryan.
What? Hey.
Nice.
On the on Leather Wings episode, her first appearance. Mm-hmm. Anyway, just thought I'd throw that in. When I hear her name, I'm like, hey, I know the guy.
Anyway, but I have a big question. I don't know if you're aware of this, Pete, but we got two big famous authors on this show. We got a guy by the name of Tom Taylor and a guy by the name of John Engel. Mm-hmm. And I have a question for our famous writer co-hosts.
Right. So I'll tune out for a second.
Does this episode feel like it had a lot of padding and exposition, or is it just me?
Yeah, it does feel like it's one of those things that doesn't have a straight line from beginning to end. There are a lot of repeated conversations and a lot of sort of side things that don't go anywhere. And we'll talk about that dinner scene eventually.
Oh, man.
The thing's weird with the beard. And
yeah. Well, you're right. There's threads that kind of just disappear. Like, I really didn't understand what was going on with Bones from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And then I never got any clarity from the Bones, like his approach to.
Yeah.
You would think I felt like he was decidedly unsympathetic to her at first. Mm-hmm. Very strange. And then
and also hitting on her.
Right. And then softening when she leaves. When he's talking to Kirk, he kind of softens towards her. And then it turns out he knew what her situation was. It's like, why not just write him as sympathetic to her? Like, withholding a secret. It's that simple. It doesn't have to be. I just thought his emotional approach to her was confusing and then didn't mean anything later at all. Yeah. Like once he says, well, I knew the whole time, but I respect your privacy, which I think is a good character beat, you know, if that's what you're, if that's where you're getting with him. But otherwise I'm like, wait, was there any kind of thing? It felt like they were building a contentious relationship between them to be a thread through the show. And it didn't
I think
anywhere.
That was meant to be more. And again, it's, you know, this was her first script. There were a couple of passes by other writers on it a little bit, but her first script. And I think that was more meant to set up the fact that was more kind of character building for her, being like, well, you know, she's here's all these doofs just being like, you know, like beauty is awesome. And she's like, well, what about other things besides beauty, right? Because she's, you know, at the time we don't know, but then she's
blind, I don't care what you're saying, you're hot.
Right. Yeah. They're like, no, but what about other things besides how things look, right? Isn't that cool, too? And they're like, but listen, babe, you're hot.
Yeah.
Well, there's that whole approach to beauty. You know, obviously, it's in the title, so it's a thematic thing. But don't they specifically say that Kalos is ugly? He's too ugly to look at?
Yeah.
She says at one point, she's like,
who's to say that Kalos is ugly? And the people who go insane from looking at him. That's measurably... upsettingly visual.
Is that ugly? Is that ugliness?
Yeah, I don't.
Like it's beauty, it's, or is that something more?
It's not. Like, it's not a. It's unpleasant because you're driven insane. I guess it's, you know.
Right.
I guess he could be so beautiful that it drives you insane too. I guess.
True. I've had that problem all my life.
Yeah. I see. I have your camera turned off right now.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just weird to hear them. You know, again, we're in this advanced culture that acts like does not act very advanced by talking about how ugly something is. It seems like by now they would have thought of a better way to express the situation.
But then that comes up too, that they're like, you know, that I like that that's then addressed about like, yes, this is a prejudice that people, humans still have, but it's brought up, but then not like everybody's just kind of like, yeah, what can you do? We're people.
60s.
Yeah.
We're trapped.
Also, Nancy Kwan.
That is okay. That's who you were talking about.
Oriental Pearl Cream.
Right. Well, here, who's Nancy Kwan not appearing in this episode, but you know who is.
Sadly.
It's Dr. Pulaski.
Hey!
This Dr. is one Pulaski. Of the two Dr. Pulaski nice. Episodes.
Nice. I wondered if me and Tom might get in a fight
about
Dr. Pulaski, because we've been at odds about this for years now.
Is there on this podcast no fist fights?
Well,
I don't feel the need to fight about her. No. I just don't like her very much.
Did you know? I didn't until researching this that to Diana Muldaur, Dr. Pulaski herself was not the original choice to play. And I've forgotten her name already. Miranda
Dr. Jones.
Miranda, Dr. Jones.
Miranda.
Yeah, Tom. Do you feel weird?
Dr. Jones.
I have a whole question for Tom. Goes. Okay. Tom, did you feel weird when there was a Dr. Jones in a scene where somebody had to be told not to look in the box when they opened it?
Yes.
I actually did. I thought, don't look at it no matter what happens.
He kept shouting, wrong show.
I want somebody out there, Jim O'Kane, somebody please immediately do a supercut of like Bones or somebody having a conversation with Indiana Jones, calling him Dr. Jones. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have to make sense. Mm-hmm. Just 5 seconds, 10 seconds. Thanks, you're the best.
Right.
Am I the only person who really was singing to themselves the Rolling Stones songs, Miss Amanda Jones, as we were watching Miranda Jones?
No. I was just going to say that when they do the cold open reveal of the box, and it's like, the ambassador's here. This shows a box. I immediately went into Alice in Chains. Man in a box. Yeah. thought that would be an appropriate music cue right there.
There you go.
A good needle drop for a little early on the timeline, but
Diana Muldaur, who this is her again production wise second appearance in Star Trek, but we haven't seen her yet. But she was kind of like a safety, like a go-to. She's the kind of Tony Randall of Star Trek. Anytime they're just like, we're in a spot. Hey, Diana. And like, apparently even for Dr. Pulaski, she had like moved to the mountains and was like hanging out. And they were like, hey, we're in a tough spot. Gates is out. We just need somebody reliable for this. She was like, I'll come down. And left this like idyllic cabin in the mountains just to come down and be on Star Trek for like a year.
I would.
She was on L.A. Law at the time.
I think that was after.
No, she was not on L.A. Law at the time of this episode.
Not at this episode,
no. At the time, do I have my timeline wrong? I thought that I thought they killed her off of L.A. Law in that spectacular, still shocks me to this day fashion.
Right.
Needed to go do Star Trek.
I thought that came after, but I could be wrong.
I thought it did too, but John sounds right now. But
I might not be. I'm totally. Yeah. All I can remember about that, my family, we were LA Law watchers. I don't even know why. My parents liked it.
It was on television. That's why.
Yeah. It was the hottest show there for a while.
And everybody was talking about it.
It was entertaining. It was a pretty good show. But there was that, you know, she was just this hated character, you know, she was real heavy, like just getting on everybody's nerves, always in everybody's way. But she had this, Richard Dysart and her had this sort of contentious romance. And then they're walking along talking about how he's not going to marry her or something. Like, I'm sorry, I just can't marry you right now. She's like, it's okay, we'll work it out. And they're waiting for the elevator. And then the elevator doors open off off screen, and then she steps in the empty elevator shaft and just falls to her death. It like clangs five or six, her body clangs down, and he just goes, Rosalind, oh my God. And I'm still to this day, I've never gotten over that one. That was really a surprise. It was, and it's like in the middle of the episode completely. Oh, wow. It's like the first act or second act.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's what I always think of that first when I think of her.
Yeah.
Actually.
It's hard to be a character who's hated in two shows.
I know. She kind of plays the same.
I intentionally hate her in LOL, I guess.
Right. I don't hate her in Next Gen.
No, I don't like her in Next Gen, but what he means is she's kind of contentious on the show. I mean, she does not gel with the crew for a long time. And that's exactly what she was doing on LA Law. She's in this firm and they're all like, she's stepping on toes and they're all contentious, you know.
Right.
So she was kind of playing the same role, actually.
And
they should have dropped her down
like
a turbo lift. And,
Just for old time's sake.
Gates is back.
But I love that she's just, you know, it's not like there's no... It's almost Vulcan, like, you know, she has no ego to bruise. Like, she's just kind of like, all right, yeah, I'll just step in for a bit. Gates is back. All right, cool. I'll see you guys later. I'm going to go breed some dogs.
And then she never, I don't believe, does she ever have any participation in any post-Star Trek stuff? I think she's kind of known for not doing conventions and
things, but
despite covering two whole different series, she could be.
I don't think it's out of, you know, negativity. I think it's just kind of like, oh, she's got other stuff to do.
She's not that kind of person. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking.
I've seen her in group interview things and stuff, like, you know, retrospectives of Next Generation and TOS.
I never have. Maybe I'm just missing that,
She's game.
Okay.
James Doohan has stories about her. According to him, not stories, but like that in his anti-Shatner rants, he would say like, Shatner was constantly coming on to Diana Mulder and I forget the exact quote, but he had some line from her like, you know, if I was going to be attracted to anybody on this show, it'd be James Doohan. That's coming from James Doohan, so who knows?
Right, yeah.
Speaking of Jimmy Doohan. He decides that he is going to wear a tartan/kilt for his formal dinner. I think that needs to be discussed.
He's Scottish.
He's Scottish.
Is he? Because I didn't know from his name.
I have the note in my thing. I was watching this. My wife was half watching it with me. She's like, oh, you know, I think this is the most handsome Scotty has been on the show.
Oh.
Like, all right. I paused, rewound a couple times, and turns out she was right.
Maybe he's right about Mulder.
Let me tell you, this is not the last time that we will see those that dress kilt with the with the sash and all that. So stick a pin in that for the S's.
Oh,
he also owns bagpipes, apparently.
Yes.
We find that out much later.
Yes.
Well, backing up for
somebody's wrath.
Right.
Backing up for a second to Diana Mulder. She was not the first choice because she was already on an episode, and there was an internal rule, not a hard and fast rule, obviously, but there's a kind of a thing. Hey, we can't reuse the character actor for more than one role, and then. Mm-hmm. A lot of people who played more than one role are just like, wait, excuse me, what about me? And they're like, no, not counting you.
You're fired.
But they say, like, you know, for a featured actor, there's some background people and some incidental aliens. But for like a featured, they didn't want to reuse somebody who had been kind of featured in a previous episode. But their original choice to portray Miranda was suddenly unavailable, and that was Jessica Walter.
Wow.
So, oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
What could have been? Great. Let's step into the alternate reality machine and see this episode
with
her.
Star Trek.
it was relatively last minute, it seems like. And they're like, hey, you know what? We'd like to. She was really good working with us on Sineski had directed Return to Tomorrow, which we'll get to way down the line, which is the other one with Diana Mulder. And they'd also worked together on an I Spy episode, apparently. So he's like, you know what? She's good. Like, can we just get her? And they're like, well, let's see. We'll put a wig on her so nobody knows. And they put a black wig on her. They did the whole thing. And then Justman was just like, well, we'll do some let it, we'll try it, see how it works. And they got the rushes back from the first one. And then Robert Justman was apparently quoted saying, like, I wonder how she looks in a red wig. We could use her next season. So, like, that perhaps fatefully, there was no fourth season. But, but yes, I like her to a certain extent as Pulaski, and I like her here as Miranda.
Me too.
And I do, going back to James Doohan for a second, I like his, besides his dress outfit, I do like his, I like that we get fanboy Scotty.
Yeah.
Like that he's like, you know, there, everybody is just like, oh man, this new, this ambassador from the, you know, this new alien that we're in contact with, and this is a big deal. And he's just like, yeah, also the guy who built the engine is going to be here. And he's just totally like, yeah, he's like, let's totally geeking out on this guy who has really no interest in him at all, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of sad.
It's funny though, because it's a seed of an idea, right, that they continue with in TNG.
That's
true. Like, oh yeah, this moment, it's fun. It's kind of rather benign. It makes sense. And then they turn it into Geordi being just a straight up stalker freak. Yeah. I mean, I'm completely obsessed with the, it's like, wait, maybe you took that idea a little too far. I mean, it makes for some pretty good episodes, I guess. But yeah, I think it's fun, you know, Scotty, and it's kind of sad because he's like, well, it's funny because what's his name, Marvick is like
Larry Marvick,
had a hell of a,
Larry.
The funniest part of the whole episode to me is when she's like, "Who's there?" and he goes, "It's me, Larry." I don't know why that cracks me up. Like, not the name you expected to hear.
I'm sad that she didn't say like, "Hello, Larry."
When he gets up from dinner, he's like, I'm bushed, you know, I've had a super long day. And then for some reason after that, Scotty's like, say, I got a bottle of scotch in the engineering for us. Like, Scotty, he just said he was tired, man. But it's funny because it's kind of I'm still going to take my chance and ask him. I'm still going to try.
He's right there. He's getting away.
And then when he comes into the engineering all crazy and Scotty doesn't know that, he's so happy to see him.
Up until, I love that, up until he gets the, like then it's like, oh, like, ship in danger, and Scotty's just like, you bastard, just like punches him right away. He's just like, you know, like,
you wouldn't get drunk with me last night. I hate you, Larry.
Yeah, he had that deep resentment about that.
By the way, Larry is in the, he's, I think I said a while ago that I was starting to watch all the Outer Limits in order.
Oh, right.
Oh, good man.
I kind of stalled out on that, but he was in the one that I saw as a kid that scared the hell out of me and just creeped me out. One of those like Saturday afternoon, I shouldn't have turned the TV on kind of things. And it kind of ruins the rest of your day because you're just weirded out. Nothing makes sense anymore. Don't Open Till Doomsday. That's the episode that he was in. And I watched it again recently and it's still extremely creepy and weird and unsettling.
Still ruined your day.
Was that not also about like looking into a box and making, having it make you go crazy or something like that?
Yes. He looks in a box and he doesn't go crazy, but he gets sucked into a thing for decades and there's a creepy thing in there. And you're right. That's don't look in boxes, Larry.
Typecast is a guy who looks in the box.
Who do we get for Larry?
I'm guessing on the,
looks in a box.
I'm guessing I'm the only person who's going to, theoretically make a reference of the for the 1970 show 1970 sitcom Hello Larry, the spinoff of Different Strokes.
That's what I did. Kim Richards was 10 minutes ago.
I didn't really hear that. I said really
I'm sad she didn't say Hello Larry.
All right, well, you got me beat.
The only sitcom, the only spinoff that perhaps had more episodes actually on the show it was spinning off than it had its, like, they're on Different Strokes more than they actually had episodes of the show, I think. It's the weirdest.
And it speaks to the show, it speaks to Hello Larry that when you say that, you mean they were on four.
Yeah.
Like, four episodes and they're both two parters.
I think they were on multiple seasons of, I think they kept,
yeah, well, one in like season that, I think two, yeah, and one in season three.
Like, there's one, they go to LA, right? Or is it, no, it's Portland. They go to Portland and visit McLean Stevenson. That's where he has the radio station.
Yeah
And then there's the one where it's, I think they're both two parters, and then he comes there and gets Mr. Drummond to buy the radio station.
Yeah.
But they fight about it because he doesn't want to buy it. And that's, I think that was them trying to inject a little extra life into Hello Larry and move him to New York. I think they moved to New York or something anyway. See, people said, now people have said they like it when we talk about other TV shows.
Well, and I mean, Kim Richards, she's also in both Witch Mountain movies and Tough Turf, classic 80s film with James Spader.
And Robert Downey Jr. Isn't the other sister in Jaws 2? I think she is.
Yeah, it's one of them's in something, kind of a bigger movie. Oh, I can't remember.
I just said Tough Turf. You don't get a bigger movie than that.
That's true.
Yeah, no bigger movies than Tough Turf.
Perhaps Escape from Witch Mountain.
I can start naming them.
Well, your IMDb.
Instead of other TV shows, I'm going to talk about another episode for a second.
Turf. Oh, okay. Wait, are you going to talk about Star Trek on the Star Trek show? That's weird.
Yes, but not the episode that we're talking about, because I mentioned that Sinensky also directed The Empath, I believe, right? Oh, no, he didn't. That was one of the other ones. But The Empath was right around here chronologically. I was looking because there's a couple of lines in here where I could tell. I'm like, oh, Nimoy still has a cold. And I was like, what was the one before that? So we totally, this is the same cold from The Empath. Because like, it's production-wise, it follows. And I'm like, okay, all right.
What was the other one? We were recently talking about another cold episode.
I think that might have been a season 2 cold.
Galileo 7?
Yeah.
No, I think it was Gamesters of Triskelion.
Oh, Gamesters.
Which, despite all logic, is a season 2 episode.
Right.
I don't know about him having a cold, but he definitely had a wig.
He had a wig?
What do you mean?
Yeah, like if you look at the third act of the episode, every time that like Leonard Nimoy's on the bridge, like his eyebrows move, but his scalp does not. It is a pretty flat, like he's wearing a wig in that episode. There, I've said it and I feel better for saying it.
What I noticed was in those close-ups that his real eyebrows were visible a little bit more than usual. And it got me thinking, I was like, oh yeah, I guess they probably did have to really like hide the real eyebrow so they could get the upward eyebrow situation.
I think they shaved,
but they didn't do a great job.
I think he had to shave half his eyebrows. Yeah,
I think you're right. I don't remember, but that's like
they probably shaved it for like day one, and then by day three, right, it was like, well, I'll just paint over him a little bit. We're probably still good. Let's see the production timeline on here. 7 days of shooting. Starting out with Miranda's quarters and the hallways and the Arboretum corridors, rec room, transporter room, bridge, McCoy's office. So the day 7 was engineering, the hallways, and Miranda's quarters. So some of that could have been day 5 and 6 were bridge stuff. So maybe that could be the stuff near the climax where you're getting some close-ups of him when he's
day 5
either being happy or freaking out. Like that's probably day 5 and 6. The also said him. talking about people we see here, talking about the hallways, the crew members that we see around, we get to Lieutenant Leslie in his last appearance, production-wise.
Oh.
Lieutenant Leslie.
Not Leslie.
Eddie Paskey.
Now, is he the human Eric, according to you?
He is not the human Eric.
Oh,
he's the kind of like more kind of corn-fed, just kind of...
I know the guy you mean. Is he the one who stares blankly at Kirk when everything's... Is that like Children Shall Lead, and maybe he can't understand what Kirk is saying? And he's kind of looking at him kind of blankly. He's like a security guy. I don't... everyone's
could be, about
when he goes up to talk to the guy, and he's like a security guy standing by the turbo lift.
Yeah.
And the guy just like looks at
him. He's not even acting. He's just looking at him. Expressionless.
Yep, could be. He's like a little square-jawed with like a bit... Hair similar enough to Shatner that every once in a while he's a photo double or he'll stand in for Shatner. He had been, 58 original series episodes.
Man.
By this point, he got an injury while filming the, is it the scene in engineering? He got a back injury while filming the scene of Spock attacking his crewmates. And doesn't appear in the scene because of it. I guess it was early on enough. And, that combined with he was having headaches from the lighting and stuff like that. He was like, yeah, you know what? I'm done.
Wow.
And, so left after this, probably saw the writing on the wall too. He's like, we're not going to get a fourth season.
Nah, true. Like,
Leslie out. And he just
disappeared. See ya, suckers.
So the last appearance of Leslie, but first, Idik.
Yeah.
Which,
oh boy.
Idik was a huge, I feel like because I didn't really pick up this episode in my tapings, as a youth. I was less familiar with it up until the DVDs came out, or maybe a little bit before then.
Mm-hmm.
So I was always aware of the Idik, but not its origin. Like, it was something that I would always see in catalogs, like we've talked about Intergalactic Trading Company and stuff like that. And that it apparently is the ideal format for that, is to see it in a catalog, because the Idik was introduced slathered onto this episode by Roddenberry because he wanted to sell Idiks. He had decided that was going to be a prop thing that he could sell through his company. Was it Lincoln Productions or Lincoln Trading or something like that? And he was like,
"Aimed after the Savage Curtain.
We need a thing that we can sell." So Spock is going to have this, and apparently, really wove it into the episode to the point where Shatner and Nimoy and a couple other people are just like, "Gene, we're not doing this. Like, no, like this is, you can't turn this episode into a commercial." Like,
Spock, what'd you pay for that Idik? Well, you know,
yeah, basically,
opened up the cabinet.
You know, if you are subscribed yourself to Starlog, you will find.
You know, no, so, you turn it just. So you can open a bottle of Coca-Cola with it as well.
Yeah, but what if I wanted it in the form of a T-shirt, Spock? Well, you know what you could do.
Now, while we're mocking him, though, but Roddenberry did come up with that concept for, like, Vulcan philosophy in terms of infinite diversity and infinite combinations.
Yeah.
Because it seems, and I say this respectfully, a little too good for Star Trek.
Well, yeah, that's the, like, I love the Idik. I love it. I love what it represents. I love it's like, you know, I love it as a symbol, but it's interesting to see how it was conceived as a cash grab. And I don't know if that was purely, you know, according to this, it's just Roddenberry came up with it and threw it in there. But we'll see. I don't know. We won't see, because it doesn't. This is pretty much it.
We'll see if you subscribe to the Patreon, where we discuss the animated episodes, which do feature Idik in one of them.
That's true. If you are a Patreon subscriber, you have heard us talk about the Idik before, not too long ago. But the Vulcan word for the same concept is Kolu-chan. Kolu-chan.
Of course it is.
Everybody, Kolu-chan.
I'm cool with Sean. Sorry.
Yeah, it's all right.
And Sean Connery, yeah, he's great. He's with James Bond in like six movies.
And I do love that the Idik is the only, God help us if we get to this, but in the Deep Space Nine episode where they play baseball, that I love that the Idik is on their hat. Like, that's a great looking hat. The Idik on a baseball cap.
I gotta tell you, after watching this episode today, the Idik is on the tattoo roster now. I'm considering it. I think it would be a nice little tattoo.
Hmm.
So we'll see.
Right
next to Harpo.
Support that in theory.
It is definitely on my T-shirt list, because I'm chicken to get a tattoo.
Brought it up. It came up with a concept. It was designed by William Werthite, so we've talked about a lot, the costume guy. Although the Okudas say that Roddenberry came up with the design of it. But there are...
I'm sorry, Pete, the Okudas?
The Okudas, Michael and Denise Okuda, the super fans who are also kind of lore keepers for all this. And,
gotcha.
They say that it was Gene, but there are like sketches and stuff for that William Werthite did, so it could be a collaborative thing, I would assume. But they came up with it and just used it kind of once in this, because there was such blowback that I'm assuming it would have probably come up in season four where they're one.
Planet of the Idik.
Yeah, and it only seems to come up kind of once, maybe in Next Gen, and then then it pops up a lot later on once people start kind of reusing a lot of canon stuff.
It's I was Spock's, looking it up. I think Tuvok, isn't it, in his room in Star Trek II? I think that's the symbol on his wall. Kind of shimmery thing on his
yes,
wall.
Yes, I think yeah. so.
The yeah, infinity mirror. You know,
there's that too.
Well, that too. Yeah, yes,
and the orb with the lightning in it and stuff. And then, yeah,
apparently and harp that he jams Spitzer, on.
He's got Spitzer's gifts room.
Exactly. Like, yeah,
it always
yeah.
cracks me up.
The toilet paper. All
yeah. yeah. references to the Idic, original series one, next gen mm-hmm. one, DS9 3.
Ooh,
Voyager 5.
No, wait, no. Voyager is 2.
Voyager 6. 5. Oh. Enterprise 10. Discovery 5. Picard 1. Movies 4. 2, 3, 6, and Kelvin 1.
Mm. The greatest but, movies.
Oddly, it doesn't mm-hmm. mention it doesn't mention the animated episode. So I wonder why. Mm. Anyway, Idic, I love it.
Idic is good.
I mean, I certainly love the concept of it, and it's a yeah. nice design with the circle with the yeah. triangle. Yeah, it looks good.
And I wonder if that actually explains, like, in that dinner scene where they're talking about the Idic and mm-hmm. like, you know, Spock's wearing it, and Dr. Jones is somewhat like, "Oh, are you just trying to make me feel like a chump or something for wearing that?"
It belongs in a museum.
It belongs in a museum, and so do you, Dr. Jones. but Kirk kind of interrupts and refers to that, and then is like, "Anyway, as we were saying," and like kind of gets away from it. It feels really awkward and stuff, and I wonder if that's Shatner being like, "Oh my god, get me out of this, I just want to get back to the episode. Yeah, I don't want to hawk this stupid thing anymore."
I think it was literally like there was a lot more discussion of it and a lot more to yeah. talk about it in the episode, and they forced Roddenberry to walk it back. And so I think that's the kind of the, you know, an artifact from that earlier, just kind of like
yeah,
content where it's just like there was a lot of talk about the Idic in this episode.
I got to say, I'm, you know, those of you who know me know that I'm a gigantic like James Bond fan from the 60s, mm-hmm. that I'm a gigantic blaxploitation fan, a big fan of like Italian exploitation cinema. With all that said, the like kind of dinner scene in this episode is one of the most misogynistic things I've ever witnessed. Like, it made me uncomfortable to watch it. It's just like, why are five men hitting on this woman?
Yeah. And they're doing it in that way, that kind of 60s way of like, we're doing you a favor. We're praising you by making you as uncomfortable as possible.
Yeah.
We're making you the center of our weird attention.
And this is written by a woman, so I really wonder why Uhura's not at this dinner.
Yeah.
I mean, just the presence of another woman with a few lines would have made a world of difference.
Yeah.
Now, that's interesting. Do you think that she was like trying to say like, hey, this is what it's like hanging out with men? Mm. Or do you think it was just sort of like, you know, just a sort of random thing with no, you know, like no internal exploration of social mores.
Again, I'm going to go back to
likely the latter.
This whole scene could have been inserted in an attempt to be, you know, Idic marketing. But then once they walked it back, they're like, all right, well, at least we'll just leave it in there and we'll just have her talk about beauty a bit. But that's, you know,
well, there's like a scene later on, I think right after this, with Larry and Dr. Jones. I don't know why the name Larry is funny, but it is.
It is.
In a Star Trek setting, it's funny.
Because it's Larry. There should be no Larrys in space.
I would agree.
It's funny. Lawrence, it's funny to picture Larry Dallas, like, because like there's a knock at the, you know, come and knock on our door, and who is it? It's the wacky neighbor, Larry.
Yeah,
but Jack.
I thought you were suggesting that Tom Skerritt's character's name in Alien is actually Larry for season. Larry Dallas.
Who knows? Right.
Don't go in that duct. Anyway.
Oh yeah, but there's a scene between Larry and Dr. Jones, and it's very, very like 40s heightened Hollywood kind of "I love you" kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, like, the dinner scene almost feels like that too. Like, if like not coming from the vastness and mindset of the future, and looking back on it from 50 years ago, it might. Back then, it might have just seemed like very straightforward. Hey, these guys are gentlemen. They're gentlemen and they're men, and they see beauty and they know what to do with beauty when they see it. And they're going to tell her how beautiful she is and how she's a statue to be worshipped or whatever and all this stuff. And so I wonder if it's sort of like if back then it was straightforward and just like, no, these are dudes and she's a chick and that's how you talk to them and stuff.
It's kind of like, because I don't think we have an official reference, it's kind of like those weird Columbo episodes where Columbo is like, hey, she's younger, like a child, and it's sort of like, you know, you're a very pretty girl. You're pretty, yeah, too.
They always, it's okay, though, because you're a nerd, and I'm the only guy who's going to tell you that.
And it's kind of like he's being sweet to kids is sort of the way it's supposed to be presented, but watching it in 2021, it's like, oh, Columbo, give it a rest. Yeah,
I'm sorry, but men in overcoats should not be talking to children in parks.
You want
to
buy an host?
Yeah, with like cheap cigars that are green. It's a weird thing.
So I do want to talk about, so we're talking about Shatner apparently had some sway over content of this episode in that he didn't want to talk about the edit. I feel like this is yet again a Shatner insisting on having more of a role in the episode than maybe he should have. Because going all the way back again to where what we were talking about with Bones, where it seems like Bones is establishing agency within the relationship with Dr. Jones. And where he has like these strong feelings and he's like expressing complicated things towards her and we're not sure why. And like I said, I felt like they were setting up a relationship for them. And then suddenly it just feels like Kirk is having scenes with her, and I'm like, why is it Kirk? I kept feeling like this should be Bones, especially the damn it, woman, tell me, you know, you gotta do this. Like, by then, that should have been the like crescendo of her and Bones's relationship as it was established at the beginning. And it makes more sense. They're in a medical situation, they're in sick bay. All these things about it felt like, oh, it's got to be Kirk because it's Kirk's show.
And he's the star.
Feel natural. To me, he should have been more of a bystander in this episode. But I think by season three, it seems more and more like Shatner was not having that. Like he was like, no, I'm the captain. It's my show. Make sure I get this many pages of dialogue. And that he did do. I mean, this is not me theorizing. He definitely did that. And this feels like one of those where it could have been a stronger episode, I think, if Bones would have been at the center of his, of that situation as far as getting her to come out and do the things she needed to do by the end of the episode.
There is a thing with this episode where it's like, wait, she needs to be seduced? Yeah, time for Kirk country.
Basically.
Which is despite the fact that Bones, go on, Tom.
We can't possibly go and ask her about that. Like, they're talking about Spock having to mind meld with the weird ambassador, and it's completely immediately off the table that they talk to her about it. Like, they have to, Kirk has to go seduce her and distract her so that Spock can do this behind her back and stuff. That's very strange.
Despite the fact that Bones actually does have, more or less, for lack of better terminology, he does have like a connection that is based on intimacy, as opposed to, I don't know if you realize this, but I'm a captain and I'm very handsome.
My mom says I'm the hottest guy on the ship.
See, Kirk doesn't have anything. He just doesn't have any agency, really. Bones knowing her secret is that's a big opportunity for drama. That's the seed of something, of a bond, you know, like, why didn't they use that more? Kirk doesn't really have any connection to her. He's always kind of a bystander. He's like, she's blind, now that makes sense. He's not like in the middle of anything, really.
He's like
kind of being in the middle.
He's like, I'm not attracted to her, she's broken. Like, he's also got that little bit of like, you know, he's like, oh, I thought you said she was hot.
Yeah.
A blind chick. She's never going to know how handsome I am.
I've got to point out the moment, the second funniest moment to me in the episode, accidentally funny, is when they argue with her. She refusing to let this mind meld happen. Finally, it's like, go talk to the ambassador. She goes in the room. We get this dramatic moment where she's walking up to the box, and then we cut to the outside, and we hear this just absolutely blood-curdling scream.
Yeah.
And then half a second later, she just walks out the door.
There's no reaction at all from the guys.
Nothing, like, they look over for a second, but then she does not seem like she just screamed at all.
Like, it's almost like she didn't like talk to Kolos or anything. It's like she just went in there like, men, damn it! Yeah, what do I got to do?
Screamed into a pillow, and then came out acting like she didn't.
Oh, you guys,
it was
that?
Funny to me. It's like, we could do this.
Hey, you guys notice McCoy's skull collection in his office?
It was awesome.
We've seen a couple of those before, haven't we, or have we?
Maybe.
I think we have. But there was one that had like two like ridges or two
like a Mars Attacks alien.
Yeah, it did kind of look like a Mars Attacks alien.
Or to put it more bluntly, a Martian. But yeah,
there you go.
Yes, that would be a Martian.
I once was, let's say once I was in the house of somebody who had an interesting collection of skulls and they were known for their collection of spooky stuff and all that, and then in their house there's the private collection of stuff that some of which they're not really supposed to have, and it was a really cool collection of skulls and stuff, but it made me think of that, and it made me think of like, why aren't there more, there should be more of that stuff instead of like one-to-one, you know, like people getting replicas of just props and stuff. There should be more just kind of like weird alien skulls and neat stuff like that. But there's also, well, while we're talking about McCoy, I really liked, there's some really good Spock McCoy bits in here. There's two things that I really enjoyed, really appreciated. One is once the ambassador merges with Spock, which we didn't really step through the plot of the episode.
Nah.
But let's say...
I don't know if you're aware of this show, but that's not a thing.
When the ambassador, you know, inhabits Spock's body, kind of, and he's just totally like he gets a chance to be like, you know, like happy Spock and just being like, and you, mm-hmm. like...
Yeah.
He's like, and I love, he's like, you know, Captain James Kirk, like longtime friend, and you, like McCoy. Also of long acquaintance. Like, I love that's you're perfect. Like, yeah, like that's perfect Spock McCoy kind of ism, where he's just kind of like, you, my oldest friend, and you, who I've also known for a long time.
I know you.
Yeah.
I love Spock Kolos combination.
I do too.
It's a ton of fun.
It's weird. I always think there's, I don't know, five or six instances in the show of Spock being not Spock, you know, like taking on some other personality or laughing his head off or something. And I, for some reason,
you know, that helicopter,
I gird myself against those for some reason. I'm like, hey, is that going to be, do I like this? It's always kind of goofy, right? But all the ones that I can actually think of are actually pretty good. And this one's great. Yeah. I love this. He's very charming. He's very, he's not doing cartwheels. He's just sort of like this other guy who's very charmed and excited to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. And you can tell Nimoy's having fun, man.
Yeah.
Say, hey, I get to do something. Every time he does that, I feel like it's just got to, it had to have been a great moment for him. Or nothing beats the amount of time. Jim! That's the number one, it always will be. But
although we'll also, I can't wait. There's another one later. Famous one, obviously, that we'll get to.
And there's another one later. I don't know if it's the one you're thinking of, but it's the other one with Diane Muldaur. The other one that she's in involves people taking on different personalities and stuff, and Spock's one of them.
All right.
You know, in short, it's really nice to see Lenny having fun.
Yeah, I hope he's having a nice time.
Like, whether you're a Spock guy, a Kirk guy, McCoy guy, or, you know, down the list, there's something that is inherently likable about Leonard Nimoy, and when you see him enjoying himself, you can't help but feel that enjoyment for yourself.
Yeah. I agree.
Along those lines, when Bones, the other thing that I love is Bones sees that, like, you know, Spock is walking around being goofy and he's like, this is delightful. I know you, all of you. Like, and and then he's going around and McCoy turns around and he's like, that's not Spock. And then, like, he turns around and he's like, are you surprised to find that I've read Byron, Doctor? And he's like, that's Spock. Like, I love that little awesome beat moment. It's totally, it's goofy. It's a little bit like, but it's totally it's good, awesome.
It works.
Yeah, it's good goofy.
Oh, definitely.
Sorry. I was going to say something and I lost it.
Was it... That, oh no, we already talked about that. I said the same cold as the empath. I said, looking at it makes you insane. Idik, Leslie, Turbolift.
I know what it was. They knock on the door again, Pete. Isn't that a thing that you enjoy?
Yeah. A physical door knock,
He just goes up and wraps it, you know, knuckles a little bit. It's like, they can't hear that through that door. Like, what is that door made of? It's got to be very thick, some sort of alloy. Anyway, it's like, come on, doorbells don't exist on the Enterprise. It's so weird to me.
Well,
I don't even think they have to push anything in TNG, right? They just walk up to the door and it goes.
Yeah. Well, along those lines, and speaking of the eyebrows that you can see, that, you know, stuff that wasn't meant to be in HD.
Mm-hmm.
when I think it's when Larry has been shut down and he's desperate to leave and he just kind of pounds on the door open button. You can totally see the handprints all over the door open button area. And I was like, oh, all right. It's like, I guess that's not the first take, or like, that's just reused, you know, set.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of reused set, this is one of my other notes was we get the Arboretum.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. The wooing
children shall lead, right?
Yeah. Does it, two episodes of TOS and these were them, and the children shall lead, and then is there truth, no beauty. So it's, that's last appearance of the Arboretum. Everybody say goodbye.
Goodbye, Arboretum.
It was good while it lasted.
I'm having a vague memory here.
Yeah.
Wasn't it originally built for a different episode and cut?
Yes. Oh. You're right. It was built for Ilan of Troyes, but that's a deleted scene.
I couldn't remember.
Starring Francis Ng, who is not Nancy Kwan.
I was just looking around for my copy of the lost scenes because I wanted to sort of supplement that information, but I can't find it up here. I don't know what I did with it.
You lost it.
It's the lost book of the lost scenes.
It's the lost scenes.
That's the trick. They make you buy it and then it's lost.
It, they don't ever say, it's just assumed that it's the Arboretum. They don't say that it is. There's some talk behind the scenes that it was some speculation that this was essentially meant to be the something like the holodeck, like an early attempt at the holodeck.
Weird.
Which was a plan for season four that they were going to like add in. This is proof that that wasn't like exactly that. Cause they he's got roses and she's like, oh, they don't smell like anything. And everybody's like, oh, it's cause it's a hologram. They're in a holodeck simulation. But then later he gives her the rose out in the transporter room. And, so it's not holographic. It's a real rose.
He had it replicated later
by any other name. See, that could easily have been this episode.
And isn't that a great scene when he gives her the rose? Because it really wraps up their relationship. everything that was so intricately built between her and Kirk.
Everything that made sense along the way is now.
This one was so close. Like, I really do think there could have been a lot more to this episode had they picked the right character to have a relationship with her.
Yeah.
And it's weird. The weirdness that we're talking about with, like, the men's attitude towards her and that just kind of, like, super crazy bro-ness around her and stuff. It's almost like a theme in the story in a way that doesn't get really played out. It just kind of gets, because when they're in that Arboretum scene, she's talking about like, you know, she's talking about being an empath and like, you know, all the constantly everybody's thoughts, you know, coming at me and everything and stuff. And the way she was saying it, I was like, oh, she's been dealing this whole time with like all these men are in love with her because she's beautiful, and it's almost like she's saying the same thing. Like she could be talking about, oh, being a beautiful woman is a nightmare because you're constantly dealing with everybody's needs and wants, and they're just putting everything on you.
Don't I know it?
Yeah. So yeah, but and again, that's not like, yeah, like if McCoy had an actual like relationship with her or a budding relationship or something, that could have been like played out in a weird way or so, you know. I don't know. Or I mean, weird meaning interesting, you know. I don't know.
Yeah,
I agree, it's frustrating.
Yeah,
what does she say, what's the exact wording of she goes to Vulcan to learn to shut down the noise in her mind, and Spock says, unlike people of Earth or humans who can't help but to take on the feelings and all this of other people. I was like, yeah, that ain't people.
People, it depends.
I think people have a pretty easy time shutting out other people's feelings.
Leave me alone.
It seems to me.
That's your problem.
Yeah. They were a little bit more optimistic about humanity back then.
Yeah.
Hey, there's this thing called empathy. Humans have it. Nowadays, we're like, humans really need more empathy.
Yeah.
Maybe you saw that other episode, The Empath.
So not to squat myself on the helm, what are we thinking about this episode? How does this rank?
You mean in a grading sort of?
Oh.
In a grading sort of way, because I've been
not
curious.
A grading like it's really grating on our nerves, but
because I've you know, I've been holding back because I can't I have mixed feelings about this, but I want to hear what you guys have to say. I mean, I guess first, what is the Pete order of grading?
I don't know how to categorize this. I think it might be...
What?
Yeah, it's... I might give it a, and not just because of the appearance of Larry, but I might give it an engineering. I might be like, it does need a little bit of work, that there's, it's there and it's got some things that I love in it. And I have a feeling I might be a little more generous towards this episode than you guys, but we'll see. Mm. But it does have, it's got solid stuff in there, but then it's also at times it kind of, it goes in too many directions at once and it doesn't, mm-hmm. doesn't. So I'll call this one an engineering episode, but it's like a Scotty, it's like a head of engineering almost. It's like, it's so close. It's almost there.
I are you gonna grade, actually grade,
or
grade?
Yeah, I don't, I'm
go for it, Tom.
Go for it, Tom.
I will go for it, even though I don't know what I'm gonna say, because I'm floating between like a, I don't know, I don't hate this episode or anything, but I do, and some of the non-traditional Star Trek-ness of it is kind of cool. Like some of those angles and stuff, and seeing more of the bridge and seeing more of the hallways and things like that. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the organ really kind of turns me off, and there's a lot of it. And then all the really trippy stuff later on, when there's like the Spock and Miranda stuff going on, and like her forehead's right in the screen and everything and stuff.
Yeah, that's a little weird.
Like there are a couple episodes where we're like, oh, this doesn't feel like Star Trek to me. This really, in a lot of ways, did not feel like Star Trek to me in a way that kind of made me like, oh, I'm watching this in the middle of the night and I'm not going to sleep well because it just sat weird with me. So there's a lot of that going on. There's a lot of like as we've been saying, you know, why is this a Kirk thing and not a Bones thing? And, you know, what exactly, like, I don't know what's going on in like the last 5 minutes of the episode. Like, she's in sick bay with Spock and Kirk's like, oh my gosh, have I just screwed it up? And like, now she's going to kill him or something. I'm like, I don't exactly know what you're talking about or what your concern is. So it kind of loses its way. I don't know. I'm floating around like a C. Maybe a C plus. I'll say C plus because it's okay. Not great. It doesn't land as a like a solid thing, but it's got a guy named Larry and stuff. And he's playing the organ
engineer. That's not Star Trek.
Yeah,
I'm gonna go one tick above you and give it a B minus, and mainly for style points. A lot of the things you didn't like are what I like.
Right.
I like the organ. I like the unique music stuff. So it's like, oh, cool, fresh music. Like so much of Star Trek original series music's fantastic. This is like completely different. I don't remember an episode having organ and this kind of horns and things quite like they had them. And I love the way it's shot. The style points are high. Joe mentioned giallo earlier. I kind of feel about this episode like I do about a lot of giallo films, where I'm like, hey, I love that movie. It was empty as a basketball, but I love that movie because it's beautiful. And it just kind of, I don't know. That's how I kind of feel about it. I wouldn't put it up there with like any great giallos or anything, but that's how I feel about it. It misses the mark thematically, but it was there, and it misses the mark with character, and it was right there. Mm-hmm. So it's frustrating in that sense. It could have been an A episode, I think, had they made a couple of the right choices with the story. But to me, it's like solid Trek, and you get to see some new stuff, a fresh look and sound, you know, so I'm going to give it a B minus.
Right. You know, John, just on the giallo thing, I just like I've been going through a giallo phase right now, and I sort of love the kind of like, it's amazing how this film has 14 people in it and zero characters.
Like, no characters at all. These people are flat as anything.
And on occasion, like Blood and Black Lace being the example, like, well, and you know what? That doesn't matter because this is a really fun movie. But, you know, the funny thing, and I'm going to cheat on my grade a little bit, because when I first watched this episode, I'm like, wow, this episode is terrible. There, like, the script is all over the place. The direction is kind of all over the place. You got a guy named Larry, for Christ's sakes. But here's my cheat. I've really enjoyed discussing it with you guys. So it gets to a C plus for me, even though my initial like thought of this was, yeah, you know what? It's better than the alternative factor, I guess. But yeah, the fun of hanging out with my guys and talking about this stupid episode of Star Trek made me think, you know what? Even stupid Star Trek is kind of fun, and therefore it gets a C+.
That's beautiful.
By that same token, I was just looking, like, my gut had a grade in it, and I was like, is that possible? Like, what can I really give it that? Let me go look at the other stuff. And I feel like the way I feel about this episode is similar for different reasons to the way that I feel about Gamesters of Triskelion, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago. And looking at that, Joe, you also gave that a C+. Tom and John, you guys swapped. John, you gave that a C+, and Tom, you gave that a B-. So those are the, you know, you guys swapped for this, and I'm going to stick with my grade from that, which is a B+, which is how I feel about it.
Oh, wow.
I really enjoyed most of this episode. I had a couple of dry moments where it's just like, well, that's not really going anywhere, like which we talked about. the places where it needs work, really, you know, they do, but it's not enough to take away from the enjoyment of it for me that I was following it. I like the interplay between the characters, the dialogue for the most part, except for Larry. Larry does, you know. Larry and Larry. Kirk should have just been like, should have been somewhere else for most of it.
He should have been like as a DJ, and I think it's Chicago.
but overall, that's I found this one very watchable. Including my son came in to watch like the second half with me, and I was expecting it to be him being like bored to tears or something, but he was just kind of like, what's going on? I had to explain it. Then picked up my daughter from school, and she was like, what was the Star Trek episode that you guys watched? I was like, well, and I tried to explain the whole thing to her in the car, and I had a couple of problems where I was just like, oh wait. And then she's also blind, but that's
I have a theory. How do you explain Star Trek to children? It's primary colors. Would you like to watch it?
It's, yeah, basically,
because I think that's why we're all in this podcast, generally speaking.
It's bright colors, and don't worry, Kirk and Spock are always going to be okay. Mm-hmm.
You might get a fist fight.
Right, yeah. Yeah, overall, that I'm happy with. I like being able to go back and look and compare. Like, oh yeah, I feel the same way. Like my gut was saying this, and I go back, and then it's like, yeah, the last episode that I gave that grade to, I feel about the same way as that. So.
Mm-hmm. Hey, out of curiosity, is this an episode for you guys? And I know we've done the grading, and I don't mean to like extend this, but like, is this an episode that you guys remembered a lot from childhood? Because this is one that, like, I know I've seen this, but it is a blank to me. This is sort of like the Cloud Minders would be the other one, where like I have had to have seen it. Like, in fact, the Netflix time bar on it says specifically that I saw it, and yet I have no memory of it.
You've already seen it, you dummy. All right.
Yeah, I think this might have been one. I don't know when I would have seen. Like, I've said that there have been a few episodes that I don't remember seeing until like the Sci-Fi Channel did their big long Alistair Cook like masterpiece theater version of it, and it may have been one of those. But yeah, it was definitely wasn't like, oh yeah, the one with the lady with the curl in her hair and the box and you're not allowed to look at it and the Spock's got the visor and stuff.
The visuals from it I was familiar with, much like, you know.
Well, the visor is sort of iconic.
Like, there are so many shots in this, not so many, but a handful of shots in this where I was just like, oh, that's where that postcard is from. You know,
exactly,
like that.
Yeah.
And so it's one that I've, you know, I'm familiar with the trappings of it and the some of the things from it, but then the actual episode itself, like, like I said, there were so many wrinkles that I forgot about. I was like, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I had seen it, but wasn't terribly familiar with it.
Mm-hmm. About that visor, though, you can't cut a new nose groove in the damn thing. It's really bizarre not to just have a little dip for the bridge of your nose.
I do love the
not when Desi Lu does it inside of a weekend.
Right,
yeah. No budget for nose bridge grooves.
I do love that, you know, they don't really address it, but I love that she goes, you know, in order to kind of keep up the charade, she's is always doing, you know, putting on and taking off the glasses, even though she's blind. Mm-hmm. She's just kind of like, oh yes, people That's need true. These to do what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting. And then also draw parallels, not just because it's side note about Diana Mulder. Is that she's often a doctor. Like, she's a doctor in both of her episodes of TOS. She's Dr. Pulaski on TNG. She's a handful of other things. She's like doctor.
She's a lawyer in LA Law. So there you go. She's always doctor lawyer.
She's, yeah.
Highly educated.
Free falling lawyer.
By the way, real quick, I did do a search. I desperately searched for the proper pronunciation of her name.
Okay.
And I didn't come up with anything 100%, but you know how they'll do those? People have those recordings of how you pronounce things.
Yeah.
4 out of 5 of those was Muldor.
No.
Hmm. Oh, really?
Only one of them was Muldar.
Hmm.
So I'm thinking it's, it Muldor. Might be Muldor. Hmm.
Muldar sounds like
a... sounds a little too Lord of the Rings.
Say, Muldor sounds like a He-Man guy that would hang out with Moss Man.
Like he's a He-Man guy that hangs out in like the corners of basements.
Yeah.
Right.
Mold or...
Muldor. There you go. That's why I said
Maisel.
So said he would hang out with Moss Man. Come on. Keep up with my... Hey. I said hello, Larry. I said Moss Man. What else do you want from me, Joe?
Okay, you said Moss Man after I said Muldor.
No, I didn't.
Come on.
All right.
Yeah, I feel that you did.
Let's say that we're done with the, ironically, maybe not irony. Is it irony? Is it fate? Is it whatever? But the episode about being blind and seeing things making you go crazy means we are done with the eyes.
Yeah, I don't see what you're talking about.
Oh.
The eyes don't happen.
Blindness. See, you didn't mention anything about blindness, like you didn't mention anything about Hello Larry or Moss Man.
Well, maybe you'll see that we will. One episode in the Jays coming up.
Hmm.
Oh. And it's
the Joe Mazels.
It's Joe Mazel the episode, everybody.
Wow.
There's another Jay sitting right here. It could be my episode.
No,
it could be,
jump on it.
It's the No Homers Club. Journey to Babel. We'll find out how we say it next week. I definitely have said it one way or the other, both several times.
Mm-hmm. You are a regular blondie when it comes to pronunciation.
Exactly.
Yeah, you said it one way or another.
In my head... Journey to Babel is known as, around these parts, Journey to Babel is known as the one where the pig man has dinner. And I think that's because of the making of Star Trek book. But we'll talk about that next week. In the meantime, we've dropped a couple of episodes. We mentioned, if you want to hear us talk more about the Idic, we did that on an episode not too long ago of Star Trek the Animated Series, which we're covering on our Patreon feed. You go to abcdtos.com/Patreon. And you can find we're doing them monthly, and then we're putting some other stuff up there. I think, as we mentioned, we're going to take a little break after L, but before we get to M, and during that break, we might continue to post some stuff over on the Patreon. So if you like the show, you want to support us, you can get some content there during the summer break. And also, don't forget our T-shirt shop, ABCD. TOS, oh boy, did I set up a redirect for this? I don't know.
Who knows?
But
sounds about right.
abcdtos.com/merch. Would I do that?
No. That sounds like something good.
But maybe I'll
say it now, Pete. In the future, you can actually speak the future.
Trash can. Remember the trash can. It is abcdtos.com/merch.
I have a question. You guys are podcasting professionals, and I am on the wakeboard of you guys' swamp boat. But is it still a truism that like rating and subscribing like helps us, it like helps us get attention and helps us like, you know, pay the shekels to keep the lights on? Is that still a thing or has that changed?
Not so much the second part, but yes, the getting attention.
Yes.
Eventually it could help you get some advertising or something.
It makes us look popular, and there's nothing more important than being popular.
Mm-hmm. Good for the show.
It's important for people to say nice stuff about us to boost our egos.
So we should say rate, review, and subscribe. That's a thing?
That's definitely a thing. The shekels come more from the merch and the Patreon, but the love and respect of your peers, that comes from rating, reviewing, subscribing. So
all right. Put a price on that.
Yeah.
So let's mention that.
Yeah. Please do that if you so desire, or even if you don't, just please do us a favor. Go
do it anyway.
Come on. What's wrong with you? But other than that, we'll be back next week with Journey to Babel. We'll find out next week here on ABCDTOS.
Pew pew pew. Pew.
Babel.
Hmm.